Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spiders. So to kick this one off, a lot of folks will email me or comment on my videos when they suffer a, we'll call it quote-unquote tragedy with one of their spiders, whether it be a mistake, something that happens with one of their spiders where it ends up dead. And I always try to make them feel better because, you know, we're only human. At the end of the day, there's going to be times where something goes wrong, especially if you do this long enough, where you mess up somewhere. And in some cases, we get lucky, and in some cases, we do not. And this weekend, I had one of those cases that unfortunately got about as unlucky as I could get. I'm still upset about it. I think it's probably going to be quite some time before I get over this one. And we've spoken many times over the course of the years about deaths and collections. I've shared stories about the deaths that I've had. I've shared the fact that I take them very hard. Like I have, it takes me a while to get over them because for me, a lot of times when you have a mysterious death, you sit there and you wonder, could I have done something differently? Is this because of me? Did I do something wrong? Did I keep it too moist? Did I keep it too dry? A myriad of thoughts go through your head. And I would love to be one of those people that is able to just go, oh, my spider died. Oh, well, they died, and move on. And I can't. Even in moments where I think that, or I'm pretty positive, I know why the spider died. I've had some spiders die from old age recently, but then I start thinking, all right, could I have slowed down the feeding schedule early on? Could I have done something to keep them going a little bit longer? So deaths hit me hard, but I'm lucky that I have very few deaths in my collection that I can point to and go, I was 100% responsible for that. And I'm glad because I don't take it well when I am. So I've spoken before about, I think one that I talked about was a Fontopelma Annex sling I had years ago that I got some bad information. I read that they needed a bone dry. I kept the enclosure bone dry. The spider basically curled up and died. That was all me, and that still haunts me, still bothers me. There is the P. sosme that I put into a new enclosure I was using. It buried itself. I was like, all right, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. Months go by. Finally, I dig up. I can't find any trace of the spider. And while I was doing another video, I realized that the hinge on the top of it, when it's closed, opens up a little gap underneath. So I'm pretty sure that spider escaped. It was my only escape to date. And it's, again, still bothers me. So I'm going to unfortunately be adding to that list of ones I was directly responsible for. And I was talking to Billy about it last night. I was like, every once in a while, I'd be like, man, I can't get over this. I'm so upset about it. And she's like, you're going to share it in your podcast. I'm like, absolutely, because I think it's a bit of a wake-up call that this stuff can happen to everybody, and we need to be careful. So long story short, I usually shoot my videos on Saturday mornings, and what I have gotten into the habit of doing now is Friday night, I'll wander up in the tarantula room right before bedtime, usually around 11 or 12 or so, and just kind of figure out who I'm going to be working with, what I'm going to be doing, and a lot of times what I will do is take that enclosure off the shelf and set it on that table that I do all my rehousings on. And this particular evening, I was planning on doing my Davis species Panama, the lava spider. I raised one years ago. I've had a lot of folks picking them up and asking me for an updated guide on them. I got a mature male, so I wanted to hopefully get a female. So I got one. I was raising up, and I picked this one up about a year and a half ago. Teeny, 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 tiny sling. And one of those ones that freaks you out, it's so small. And it's molted about four times in my care. It put on a decent amount of size. It molted about 2 weeks ago. It had eaten once, and it was going to be time for rehousing. And I was very excited to feature this one again, because again, a lot of people are asking about it. They're expensive spiders. People want updated information on them. So I go out, I take the vial off the out of the container. I keep it, I have like little Tupperware things I keep all my little sling vials in. I bring it over to the table, and I'm going to leave it there. And I'm like, you know what? I just feel weird about leaving this one little vial right out in the middle of the table. I wanted to get out my little transfer station. I used a little Tupperware bin I do my rehousings in, and it had a bunch of stuff in it. I'm like, nah, I'm not going to do that. And maybe I'll just put it back on the shelf. I'll remember tomorrow, obviously, which one I'm going to do. And then I decide to check on her. So I pop the top of the cap. I look inside, and she's in there. She's definitely looking big enough to be rehoused. And she kind of crawls up the side of the enclosure to, it was a little dram vial, to kind of see what's going on. And I'm like, oh, nope, can't come out. So I go to put the cap on, and it's one of those, you know, dram vials with the little white snap caps. And I basically very carefully touch the side of it where her legs are to make sure that she doesn't have her legs in the way, and then close the container. And I go over, I set it back on the shelf and it's a little thing, go downstairs, no problem. Next morning I wake up, it's time to set up. Usually what I do is I go up, I get everything ready, get my notes ready, set the lights up, and I go to grab the container, and I notice that the white cover on the top is slightly askew. And I'm like, oh gosh, I didn't pop that thing down the whole way. So I go to pick up the container, the top comes completely off. And I'm like, no, this can't be happening. I look inside, and the spider is gone. So if you've seen videos of my tarantula room, the ones where I do my intro, this one would be kept behind me. It's kind of like right at the top of the stairs with the shelf that it's on. Again, it's inside a larger container because sometimes in the wintertime I do the little sling nurseries and I'll put a thing of water in it, put a cap on it so it keeps the humidity level up. And there's paper towels on the bottom of it. So I'm like, all right, maybe it got out and got into the paper towels that are on the bottom. So I take the thing off the shelf, painstakingly take all the slings out of it, take each piece of paper towel out, check it, nothing. Take the one next to it, there's another sling container next to it, nothing. Take the shelves off, check the lips of all the containers I had to make sure it hasn't curled up in the lip and webbed itself up. Spent about 2 hours before I decided that I probably wasn't going to find it trying to look for this spider. Heartbroken. So we come up, we shoot the video, I'm editing the video, it's taking me a while, and I go back downstairs, I take a break, and Billy's like, do you think you'll find it? And I go, unfortunately, because I have a lot of little house spiders and stuff, and cellar spiders in the tarantula room, the worry is, and this is usually what happens, when a tiny sling escapes, and I've had people tell me, like, oh my gosh, my OBT escaped, or one of my Piornata escaped, it's a little tiny sling, do I have to worry about it hurting anything? The sad part is, when they get out in the house, if you have any spiders, they usually fall prey to the house spiders. So when I did my search for it, there were some webs underneath and a couple spiders underneath the bottom shelves. I checked all the webs. I went nuts trying to find this thing. Couldn't find it. So way later on, I post my video. I'm ready to leave the tarantula room for the afternoon. I'm still upset. And I decide, you know what? Let me just check around the top of the stairs and the staircase. I get out my flashlight and I swear I wasn't on the step 2 seconds. I look down and I see a decent size like cellar spider sitting there in a web, and it's got something in the web. And I'm like, please don't let it be. Like, part of me was just wanted to know where the spider was, but a huge part of me didn't want to see the spider that I had raised for a year, close to a year and a half or so, in another spider's web dead. So I get down the floor, shine the flashlight on it, and as you've probably guessed, there was the Davis species Columbia in the web. It looked like it was getting, a lot of times with these spiders, they'll web them up a little bit, and I've seen things where the prey's still wiggling and they haven't attacked it yet, they're just webbing it up, and I was hoping maybe I caught it soon enough. I get down close, the spider's kind of webbed up, so I ended up pulling the spider out of the web. I did not kill the other spider. Billy's like, what'd you do to the other spider? I'm like, nothing. It's doing what spiders are going to do. I mean, as upset as I was, it had easy prey. So I pull the spider out of the web, I take it out, it's dead. So I can't even describe, even telling the story right now sucks, because it's one of those things, it's 100% my fault. Should have double-checked the vial, but I'd never had that happen before. And afterwards, I picked the vial off the shelf and did exactly what I did the night before, where I kind of tucked the edge of it where the spider's legs were. I clipped that in, and then what I tried to do is lean my hand back and then clip the other side. And I realized that when I clipped the other side of it, the one that I had originally clipped in probably popped up at that point. So one part of it was kind of, it felt like it was on, but it wasn't completely on. And then later on, it probably just popped off on its own. The spider went out investigating and got out. So absolutely, I can't even describe how upset I am. I can't, and I think for me, I have this thing with accountability where I feel like I need to be held accountable stuff. When I screw something up or something dies, I need to tell people because I kind of want people to go, yeah, you shouldn't have done that. I don't know. It's like I need to get it out there and feel like somebody's hearing it and somebody's going, yeah, you messed up. And I did. I messed up. I have used tarantula vials for tarantulas for years. And every once in a while you have one where like one of the little lips is kind of up a little bit and you catch it. I've never had anything like this happen. I the worst part is I was extra careful putting the top on because I didn't want to hurt the spider and catch its legs in there. And as a result, I killed my spider. So terribly upset because, and this was one that it was like the perfect storm of just kicking you right in the, we'll say butt, because A, it was the one I was going to be focusing on my video for this weekend, and I was super, I've been raising this thing up, waiting till I could feature it in a video and go, all right, here's one that I've raised up a little bit, it's getting there, you know, another sling. Number two, the thinking about raising up this sling, where I was going to talk about my notes about how to raise it up, one of the things I was going to talk about today is raising those tiny slings up and how stressful it can be. So it was not only going to be basically the impetus for the video I was shooting, but it was also the impetus for this podcast we're doing today. So double whammy, you can't even sit down and do this podcast when that was the spider I was going to be referring to quite a bit throughout this podcast. So really bummed out, really upset. Now I'm going to have to try to find another one and raise it up, and it's going to take another couple years and just And just the fact, and I hate to say it, I don't like to anthropomorphize, but I just see this little sling that I've cared for, cute little thing, it's been adorable, and thinking of the poor little guy caught up in a web getting attacked by the other spider just is, it's gutting me. So that's how we're starting this one out, unfortunately, but I did feel I need to share that. Yes, we're human. Yes, action. Nobody's perfect. I love when I put something up and I say, made a mistake, and somebody will come up and go, wow, I can't believe you admitted to making a mistake. Well, of course. Like, there's no point in not relating this stuff, because I think every time something like this happens, it's a very good reminder that it can happen to anybody. I've been doing this a long, long, long time, and I pride myself on my concentration and care to detail when I'm up here in the tarantula room. So if it can happen to me, it can happen to anybody. I was just talking to a keeper who was terribly upset because they rehoused, I believe it was a T. albopilosis sling, a little tiny one, and they put it in something where the ventilation holes they made were too big and the sling got out, and they were just so upset. And I felt bad because we've all been there. A lot of the thing is with a lot of this stuff, we've all done it. We've all had it happen. Is it something we should just walk away from and go, oh, well, you know, everybody does it? No, that's definitely not my point. But the point is that obviously when you're in a hobby that involves taking care of animals, we're in charge of their welfare. When something like this happens, that's 100% on us. So the best thing we can do, I mean, make it mean something. Learn from it. You can bet your butts I'm going to be checking those vial covers from now on. There will never be a point where I put a vial up on that shelf where I don't check and double check it to make sure that it's on. As it is with most of my, I'll be in bed, and I don't know if anybody's ever done this before, but you're working with the spiders, you go to bed, and then all of a sudden you just think of one like, did I close that enclosure? Did I put the cover back on? And you freak out, and you run back up with the flashlight, or you turn on the lights, and of course it's always fine, but we've all had those moments. This was not one of them, unfortunately for me. I wish I had realized it, but I didn't, and now it costs the spider. So I took a couple pictures of it. Just honestly, it was, to explain to people, this is what can happen, because I've talked about for years that when spiders get out, they can become prey for house spiders and spiders around the home. And I've had folks express incredulity that this could actually happen. How can that happen? The spider were deaf, the tarantula should be able to take it. No, that's not the case. So I don't know. I may put it on the show, on the website, the one for the podcast. I can post stuff up there, and I may put it up there just as a stark warning to be careful. I mean, somebody, I was telling another keeper, and they're like, oh my God, such an expensive spider. I don't care if it was a $3 spider. This one kills me. Yes, it's made more so, worse because of the fact they're so expensive. It's not like something I can just run out and grab another one, but it doesn't matter. That one's on me. So there it is. That's my penance for sharing it with you guys. Again, hoping it serves as a reminder. We can all make mistakes, and we all got to be extra careful when we're working with these animals that we don't do something that results in their deaths. So the main, as I've already explained, the main topic for today, I was calling this one the Itsy Bitsy Spider, because I've had a lot of folks over the last several months email, comment, express a desire to have me come up with some type of guide for when you're raising teeny tiny slings. And I've made it very clear that I've raised a lot of slings. I've raised a lot of teeny tiny slings. They freak me out. They still freak me out to date. I will shop for spiders online, and I always look to see what size they are. And when I see 1/4 of an inch, 1/8 of an inch, 1/16 of an inch, sometimes I'll steer clear of it because it requires an extra attention to detail. You're dealing with an animal that has increased fragility because of the fact that it's so small. You think a 1/2 inch or a 3/4 inch or a 1 centimeter spider is a small spider, a 2 centimeter spider. You're talking about a fairly, in most species, either one of the larger ones, it's a decent sized sling, or you're talking about a very well started spider. And a lot of folks look at those ones, those size, and think, oh my God, so tiny. It's a totally different league when you get down below a 1/2 inch. And I remember getting my first super tiny ones. It was Hoplopus species Columbia large, or Hoplopus formosus. And I remember opening the things up, looking at those teeny tiny spiders going, what am I going to do with these? They're so small. It's ridiculously intimidating. And so I think there's almost, when we talk about people that are moving into slings for the first time, and I obviously did my sling guide, one of my recommendations is always to find well-started slings first. Don't jump right into the little 1/8 of an inch Homeoma chilense. That's not the way, as much as they're from. And I know some people are doing it right now. And if you did jump right in, don't worry. That's what we're going to do this podcast for, to help you guys through it. But that adds extra stress. I always try to tell folks, when you're shopping for slings for the first time, pick something that's, I usually go for 3/4 of an inch, which is what, a centimeter and a half or so. That's usually a good place to start. They're usually well started. You can see them. There's a bit less stress involved. But when you're talking about the teeny tiny ones, the ones that are, I don't know, 1/4 of an inch, 1/16 of an inch, you are talking about an incredibly small spider. And with that comes a lot more stress. It's stress for me. Like, and I think I'll throw that out there just so folks understand. I'm coming at this from the angle, not, oh yeah, I'm Tom's Big Spiders, I raise these things, no problem. No, I freak out when I get smaller ones. I tend to spend a lot more time fixating on them. I run the risk of overcaring for them, because you recognize how fragile, how small they are. So in this podcast here, what I'm going to do is share some of the tips, some of the things that I have done to make raising up these teeny tiny ones a little bit easier and a little bit less stressful. And of course, as always, this is just what I've done, what's worked for me. I always encourage folks, if you have something that works for you, feel free to chime in with it. And for the folks, I'm going to throw this out there because it always happens. For the folks that have had good luck with the teeny tiny slings, and you're like, oh, there's no problem whatsoever, they're no different than the big ones, because there always seems to be somebody that does that, and it's kind of this weird flex. Save it, because that's great and that's awesome, and I'm glad. I don't wish stress on anybody, but I think for the vast majority of us, myself included, the teeny tiny ones are a bit more stressful. I hear more reports of the teeny tiny ones dying than the larger ones. So let's just, for the sake of, that's great. If that's the case, share what you're doing for the rest of us so we can all have that peace of mind. But I just want to throw that out there, because every time I do one of these, somebody's got to come up and kind of get, you know, braggadocious and, oh, I have no problem, raise this. Fantastic. I've raised a lot too. It doesn't mean I don't stress over them. So first thing you want to consider when looking at a teeny tiny sling is your enclosure. And one of the biggest mistakes I see, or not mistakes, but places where I think people make things more difficult or more potentially dangerous than it needs to be, is when they select their enclosures. I see a lot of folks that will pick up a sling that's, you know, 1/3 of an inch, 1/4 of an inch, and then they pick up one of the 16 ounce deli cups, or they get one of the fancy enclosures out there. They're usually about 2 by 2 by 3 inches or so. Those, or they get one of the smaller ones and they put the thing in and they're like, wow, this thing's swimming in the enclosure. Those types of enclosures I tend to stay away from for teeny tiny slings and first, second, third instar slings, because I found A, they can be a little bit too big for it. B, I found that because they're very well ventilated, which is usually a really good thing, they can be a little too ventilated. So I can't tell you how many folks that have contacted me, hey, I found my spider in a death curl. I don't get it. I just moistened things down last week. I looked in, or I sprayed it, because the misting, as we know, is only a temporary solution for hydration. And they send me photos and it's a little acrylic enclosure, and it has ventilation around the sides, the top, which is great, except it allows that, because there's so little substrate in those little things, because obviously little enclosures, not a big amount of substrate, that substrate dries out very quickly. And that's one of the tricks and one of the things you have to play with when raising up these small spiders, is maintaining that moisture level, making sure things don't get too dry. And it can be a lot more difficult with something that allows that much evaporation that quickly. Now, that's not to say, I think with species, the arid species, I mean, coming off the top of my head, a C. kainopubescens, a G. porteri, something along those lines, those slings that do well in the drier conditions, totally fine. I don't think it's a real issue. G. pulchra is one that you could, you know, that can dry out a bit. The slings will still do fine. But for slings that need a little bit of that moisture, you want to be careful with those types of enclosures. I usually shy away from them. A, I figure there'll be enough time to get nice enclosures once they put on a little size. I'm not into the, personally speaking, obviously other people that are buying their first spider want to show it off. I totally get it. But for me, it's not about showing them off when they're slings. For slings, it's about making sure they have the correct environment, the safest environment that ensures they grow up and get to that juvenile stage, and then maybe rehouse them into something a little bit nicer. So for enclosures, for the little teeny tiny guys, I always encourage folks to use the old hobby staple dram vials. I think they work great in that you can get the really small ones. And as far as what size, I personally, for the teeny tiny ones, will use the old plastic, the snap cap ones, the 5-dram ones. They're 13/16 of an inch by 2 1/16 inch. That's the very specific. So about 2 inches deep by an inch across, or so around there. You can also, 6 dram vials will also work, but you want a smaller dram vial that'll allow you to keep track of the sling. Because the most stressful part of these, raising up these little ones, is the fact that it can be so difficult to see them. Some can be so small, and they obviously blend in. They're brown little slings. They blend in with the substrate. It can be so tough to look in there and find where the spider is. I've had ones that I've literally made myself almost cross-eyed, given myself a headache, trying to concentrate. I'd have to get out my phone and put it on the magnification, you know, kind of zoom in and try to find the spider because I couldn't find it. So you want to make sure, the reason why we use the smaller enclosures first, A, smaller enclosure, easier to spot the spider. And that's what it's going to be about those first, maybe the first year or so, while it's putting on size, when it molts a few times, gets to the point where you can see it better, then you can put it in something bigger, but it's about being able to find the spider. And also, those dram vials create nice little microclimates. So you can kind of, one of the things you do is you take a little thumbtack or a pin, you poke a little holes in the top. And I know we always talk about cross ventilation, but I think a lot of folks in the industry have used the dram vials early on and had great results with keeping slings in them. When you get them out later, you know, when you get them to your next enclosure, then I usually put the ring of ventilation holes all around the side and everything. But with the dram vials, the ventilation, a little ventilation on the top, not too much, because you don't want that thing to evaporate out too quickly. You can allow for enough ventilation while not creating an environment that dries out too quickly, because that's going to be probably the number one killer of the tiny slings: dehydration, when things dry out too quickly, and then you end up with a dead sling. So I've had folks ask before, wouldn't it make more sense? Because obviously, if you have a teeny tiny enclosure, the amount of substrate you can put in is very, very small. And therefore, it makes it a little more tricky to make sure that substrate stays appropriately moist without overdoing it. It makes it so it dries out a little more quickly. And I've had folks say, well, wouldn't it make sense to use a larger one so that you can control the environment a little bit better? That's one way of looking at it. I know folks will sometimes put them into the 5 ounce deli cups because those are kind of small, but the surface area in there, and if you put some cork and some other stuff in it, it can make it, again, more difficult to find your spider, more difficult to see if it's eating, more difficult for the spider to find its prey. I've had people go, you know, I know the spider's in here, but I'm not sure where to drop the prey at them. That's why I like to do the smaller dram vials, because again, you're going to spend a little more time, you're going to check them a little more often than you normally would your other slings, and you're going to make sure that things don't dry out too quickly. So now you have your enclosure, you've got your little dram vial, you're going to obviously want to put some substrate in it. What I like to do is put a layer of moist, really moist substrate, pack it down really well all the way down the bottom, and then put some slightly drier stuff on the top. And as far as what to use, I usually, now here are the two things, and this is probably going to have some people scratching their heads. Number one thing that I've used with great results for my smaller ones, and I started doing this a ways back and it worked out great, so I've continued doing it. Instead of putting in dirt, I put in New Zealand sphagnum moss, shredded New Zealand sphagnum moss. I'll put in a moist sprig of that in the bottom of that little 5 dram vial. And what that allows for is, A, there's natural, A, it's light colored. So a lot of times it's easier to spot the spiders on them. I love when you can look in there and go, oh, there it is, right? There's a little dark spot. There's the spider right there. B, because it's of its consistency, when you pack it in there, it leaves a lot of little nice hidey holes for the spider to use and web up in. And I've had a lot of good luck of the spiders, because they're not going to burrow, obviously, being able to get in between the little stems, the little branches, and do a little webbing, and then they create their little area there. And it makes it, again, a lot easier to spot the spider because it's right at the surface, it's webbed up, it's created a little den in there, and it allows you to keep an eye on it. And then what I also like about using New Zealand sphagnum moss is, obviously, sphagnum is used because it holds moisture well. So it not only holds the moisture a little bit better, but it's a little easier to create when you're trying to add the moisture, to make sure you don't overdo it, underdo it, flood it. So sometimes when you pack dirt, picture a little dram vial, you've packed your substrate in, you pack your dirt in, you go to add moisture, and because it's so packed in and because there's so little dirt, it just puddles on the top. And then you have a situation where you're flooding the burrow, you're waiting for the moisture, the water to trickle down through the side of the substrate, you go down to the bottom, it can be a pain in the butt. With sphagnum, I love that I can go in there with a pipette or a syringe and just kind of kiss the side of it, make one little spot moist, and keep the rest of it dry. So it's a lot easier to create that ability for the spider to go, all right, I need more moisture, I'm going to go on this side of the vial, or I want it a little drier, I can come over here. Also, if you leave it a little drier on one side, when you go to feed them later on, especially if you're using pre-killed, you have less of a chance of mold building up before you can pull the remains out. So I love New Zealand sphagnum moss. I'm raising up some Rocky Palma albiceps. And when I got them, again, super teeny tiny, and I put them in the New Zealand sphagnum moss, and they've done great in it. Now that they put on some size, I'm going to be rehousing them to something a little bit bigger, because now they're probably close to a half inch or so. But when I got them super tiny, they're the ones that molt, and they honestly seem to get smaller when they molt. But now that they're bigger, I will move them, but those worked out really well for them. I've done it before with my Sued Hopalopus species, my Sued Hopalopus species Columbia. I've used this with when I raised slings of Hopalopus species Columbia large or Hopalopus formosus, same thing. It worked out really well for me. So that's something to consider if you're raising the teeny tiny slings, giving them something like that. Again, the sphagnum moss just offers so much in terms of versatility and being able to keep certain parts moist, certain parts dry, be able to see the spider, give them hides. It's not what most people would normally think to do, but it works great. Now, if you don't want to use that, completely understand. The other thing that works great is one of the ones that kind of in the hobby gets a bad rep because a lot of folks say it's just not the best thing to use for tarantulas. But I found that for smaller, especially slings, I usually use this for slings because the traits that many of us find make it not the most suitable substrate for larger tarantulas actually work out well for tiny ones. I'm talking about cocoa fiber. I keep the majority of my slings now on cocoa fiber. And the reason why is the fact that cocoa fiber not only absorbs moisture very, very well, it also releases moisture very quickly. I talked about how my son Ronan and I years ago did an experiment with like topsoil, cocoa fiber, peat to try to see which held on to moisture the best. And the cocoa fiber dried out so much more quickly than the other ones, which can be an issue when you're keeping larger species. And it's like sometimes you'll moisten stuff down and within a week it's all dried out. But with the slings and using those dram vials, I think it'll hold on to moisture a little bit longer. But because it absorbs moisture well, it makes it much easier to make sure your spiders are hydrated. So again, as we mentioned before, one of the issues with using some of the denser substrates, even like I've used BioDude before and I've stopped using that because it's got a lot of chunks of stuff in it. And when you pack it down, it has a lot of peat, sand, and things in it that are meant to hold that moisture, but it doesn't necessarily want to receive the moisture very well, especially, again, when you're dealing with a small vial or a small container. So I've always found that cocoa fiber is nice because you can pack it down, and it's very easy to moisten up, and it's easy to moisten up in a way that you're not going to put too much moisture in. So what I can do is, if I have a vial, I take my little pipette and syringe, and heads up, you've heard me mention a couple times already, if you're raising teeny tiny slings, you need a syringe or a pipette. That's how we're going to be putting our moisture in. None of this spraying stuff. You're going to take a pipette or syringe, you're going to put it right in the corner of that substrate, and you're just going to put a little bit of water in, and you're going to watch the water kind of be absorbed quickly by the cocoa fiber. And what you want it to do is kind of go down the side and down to those bottom layers. So you keep the bottom moist, you know, the top can be a little bit dry, and then the spider can then burrow to the moisture level it needs. It's not sitting and sopping wet substrate all the time. And the cocoa fiber just, it absorbs so well. It makes that part of it easy because that's, again, hydration is going to be key when keeping these tiny spiders, and you want it to be easier. You don't want to have that situation where you come in with your little pipette, you have your little thing of dirt, you squirt some water in, and then you're sitting there watching it for 10 minutes, waiting for it to absorb into the substrate because it's just puddling on top. Or what will sometimes happen is you put it in there, it sits on top, and then evaporates before it soaks up into the actual dirt. So cocoa fiber is great with that. Plus, the other thing it's good for is because it'll dry out a little more quickly, there's going to be those moments where you might accidentally overhydrate. You put too much water into the sub, it's a little overly moist, and that will dry out a little more quickly. So it might save you having to rehouse the spider. So for me, my tip, New Zealand sphagnum moss, cocoa fiber. I love using both of those for the teeny tiny ones, the little guys. And I think they work great as far as hydration, keeping the spider hydrated, allowing you to control where the hydration goes. I think they're awesome. As far as a depth, you want to be careful here because some of these little guys will burrow. And as we've established, some tiny slings can burrow to the point where they won't surface. They're expecting stuff to be in the ground with them. So you want to be careful of that. I honestly have to say with the species I've read, the small ones I've raised, I haven't had that issue too much. But you want to make sure, I have had situations where they've gone all the way down the bottom, like I use sphagnum moss, and it made like a little web tunnel all the way down to the bottom, and that can make things a little tricky at times. So you don't want to put much more than maybe a centimeter and a half or a half an inch of substrate in there. That's usually about enough to make sure that the spider has enough room, enough substrate for you to make sure that it doesn't dry out too quickly, but not too much that it gets lost in the actual enclosure or lost at the bottom of it. Another tip is that if you're using cocoa fiber and or some other type of substrate, because maybe you don't want to listen, and that's fine, and you want to do something else, it's totally fine. I'm just giving my recommendations here. You've used something else, Reptisoil, there's other things out there. Whatever it is you're using. A lot of times when I set up sling enclosures, I like to put a lot of sphagnum moss on the surface because A, again, another way for them to get moisture. Sphagnum moss is a nice little natural water dish for tarantulas because it'll hold on to that moisture, and I've seen them come up into the sphagnum moss after I moisten it up and drink from it. It also allows for coverage. So for the ones, if you don't want them to burrow too much or they want to just hide and web up a little den, they can go under that sphagnum moss. With the smaller ones, be careful not to put too much in there, because what can end up happening is if you have both dirt and the sphagnum, a bunch of sphagnum at top, it can make it much more difficult to recognize where the spider is. I've done that before where I put in, you know, packed in my substrate and I put a big old chunk of sphagnum moss in there. I think at this point I was using the green stuff, the normal stuff, and the spider got in there somewhere and I couldn't find where the spider was to feed it. I didn't know where to drop prey items. If you're going to put some in there, which is a good thing to add a little extra moisture, just make sure that it doesn't take up too much of the surface area. I found that putting a little bit in a corner so that the spider can have that to kind of hide and have it to get moisture from is fine. Just don't overdo it with that, because again, it can make it difficult to spot where the spider is. So now we have our enclosure, we have our substrate picked out, we've got it all set up, we put our spider in. Now the part that stresses everybody out, feeding. The problem with feeding these guys is that A, they are so small, it can be almost impossible to find live prey items for them that are appropriately sized. B, they're so small that sometimes they eat and you can't even tell they ate, which can be confounding. I've had so many people tell me over the years, I'm feeding it, it's not eating. They come back and they go, it molted. So I guess it was eating. The problem is they're so small at that point, they don't need a lot of food. So if we put something in, a lot of times we'll put in larger prey item for them, pre-killed and such. They'll feed off it and then they fill up, but it looks like the thing hasn't been touched. So it can be a little bit tricky with the feeding. One thing I would say right off the bat, that I think is the best tip I can give, don't bother trying to find, for the most part, live prey. I will explain what you can use if you really want to get into the live prey part, but don't bother trying to find live prey. When you're talking about slings that are, you know, 3 millimeters or 1/4 inch or whatever, you're talking about ones that even some of the flightless fruit flies they sell over the counter might be a little bit too big and intimidating for them. And then you don't really want to buy a whole flightless fruit fly colony to feed one fruit fly off every couple of days. It just doesn't make sense. And I think the majority of folks that are getting slings already have larger spiders anyway. So you already have things that are probably appropriate for the smaller spider. So for the teeny tiny ones, scavenge feeding is the way to go. My favorite thing to use for scavenge feeding is a cricket drumstick, which is the leg of a cricket. And over the years, I've used other things. I've cut up pieces of mealworms. Mealworms, you can get them. And the nice thing about that is you can keep them refrigerated. So if, again, you only have a handful of slings and you buy this pack of 50 mealworms, take one mealworm out, crush its head, cut it into little segments, put the rest back in the refrigerator, they'll hold. So you don't have to keep buying, you know, animals, feeders from the pet store. It works out great. And then take that little piece, you drop it in, hope it feeds, pull it out the next day. But the reason why I like the cricket drumsticks is because they're so convenient to pluck out. A lot of times you drop in, like I'll often use Red Runner nymphs, and I will basically pre-kill them, crush them, and drop them in. And the problem with those is the spider is not going to eat at all, and it can be difficult to pull the remains back out because they get gooey. It sticks to stuff. It molds very, very quickly. Where the legs, what I found that's great is you have the whole leg. So you put the leg so that the bottom, the beefy part, the drumstick part, is toward the bottom where the spider is on the substrate. And you can kind of leave the leg trailing up the top. So later on, when you got to pluck them out, you grab a little pair of tweezers, you grab the end of the leg, pluck it right out. Easy as heck to get rid of. So I've been using those a lot more, but any pre-killed thing will work. And I think that's the important thing, is to recognize it early on when they're in their natural environment. A lot of them will scavenge feed, so it makes sense that we allow them to scavenge feed in our collections. And I found just about every teeny tiny spider that I've kept scavenge feeds with no problem. So the trick is with them, I encourage folks, when you're feeding, I know a lot of us feed in the weekends, we'll get up Saturday morning, do some feeding or whatnot. With my teeny tiny slings, What I like to do is feed them at night before bed. I open the enclosures out, I drop in my drumstick, I close it, I come in the next morning, and I pull out the remains. And the reason why we do it at night is because that means the spider has its best shot to get to that prey item before it starts to dry out. Like I've had using little smaller cricket drumsticks, they can dry out rather quickly. You want to make sure it gets a good meal out of it, and obviously the juiciness in the end of that leg will entice it. So you drop it in at night, turn off the lights. That's usually when the spiders come out to hunt, and then they find it really quickly, jump right on. I can't tell you how many times I've done this where I'll go to feed them. I feed a bunch of them cricket drumsticks, close the containers completely this time, put them on the shelf, come back a little later on with the flashlight to check, and they're all on the end of the drumsticks eating. And you'll notice with the small ones, you're not going to be able to tell that they ate. And that's important to know. So what you're going to do is you put it in that night, you assume a hungry sling is going to come out at night, it's going to find that drumstick, it's going to feed on it, and then it's going to go back to wherever it was. So even in the morning, I've had folks go, I don't get it. I came in, I dropped the drumstick in, it's still there. No, it's probably fed off it. It just didn't take very much. You can't see it. So the next morning, and this is important, you want to pull that drumstick out. Why is it important to pull it out? Because in those little dram vials, it doesn't take long for you to get mold. And what you don't want, and I've had this happen unfortunately before where I screwed up, didn't pull out the prey item or didn't recognize the prey item was still there, it get moldy. They get that fluffy white mold. It takes over everything very quickly. And although I haven't ever seen anything die from it, I can't guess it's very good health-wise for the spider to be sitting in basically an entirely mold-infested environment. So that's why we drop them in at night. That gives them a good, at least, 8 hours or so to feed off it. In the morning, you come, pull out the remains, you avoid mold, and hopefully your spider ate. And then what I usually encourage people to do is because you're using pre-killed, there's no risk of anything hurting your spider if you drop in live prey. Because what you're going to do is keep dropping in whatever your schedule is. Every 3 days, every 4 days, you're going to drop in a leg. You're going to pull it out the next day. And I'm telling you, what will happen is a couple weeks, you'll come in and the spider will have molted. I just had that happen with my Davis species Panama. I dropped in a leg. I came back the next morning. It had molted. It obviously wasn't ready to eat because it had already been eating, but I couldn't tell it was eating because when I pulled those legs out, they didn't look like they were fed upon. So that's a tip that I can give you. Drop it in at night, take it out in the morning, repeat, and just again, try not to stress over the fact that you can't tell that it's been feeding. Most of the time I've found in these instances, the slings are feeding just fine. You just can't tell. And it's important to note that the smaller slings don't seem to get as chubby sometimes as the larger slings. So you get like a larger, say, I don't know, we'll go with Gramostola pulchra. Huge, big, shiny booty on it when it gets, you know, full. You can tell that spider has been eating great. Smaller ones, I've seen, like, for example, the Haplolepis species Columbia large, their butts don't get all that big. They don't get bloated. Adult female, big old booty. Little sling, tiny booty. Doesn't look like it's been eating. So I think what happens is people see those smaller booties and they go, oh, it hasn't been eating. It's starving. Not necessarily. So it's tough because I get it. When you keep these animals, you want to know that they ate. You want confirmation that they ate. And sometimes you don't get that. Another thing to consider is, I've had this happen before. People drop in, they pre-kill a red runner roach, say. They drop it in and this little third of an inch spider comes. It feeds on it. They take the red runner out. They 3 days later drop another one in. The spider doesn't touch it. They're like, oh no, I don't get it. It ate and now it's done eating. Spiders, baby spiders, if you give them a big enough meal, will sometimes fill up in one feeding. So they'll eat, they'll fill completely up because there's more there than they could ever even need. And then they don't need to eat after that. So you'll have that situation where your spider, it's one and done. It ate, it fed. I've seen ones where I come in the next morning, it's still feeding on it. I take that thing later out in the afternoon, it's done. It's probably not going to eat again. So that's something to be aware of as well. And honestly, that can go for a lot of like larger slings too, or even some juveniles. You give it something really big, some of those guys will fill right up and they're done. Now, if you really want to do live prey or you have some of these available, another alternative for the teeny tiny ones, and I've used this, it works great and they pose no threat to the spider whatsoever, springtails. I've used springtails before. You add a few springtails to an enclosure. You just got to keep an eye on because they will, you know, the population of them will blow up if you're, you know, not careful. But I even had them blow up in one of the enclosures that I had, and it did nothing. The spider was perfectly fine. It didn't seem bothered by him, but I have seen the little small, tiny spiders feed off of springtails. I had read somewhere that you could do this, and I decided to try it out, and I will tell you, I was freaking out that it was going to do something, because we all, you know, obviously heard that the isopods pose zero threat to spiders, and that's not exactly true. There are some things to be aware of there. And so when I put the springtails in originally, that was in the back of my mind. Could this be another thing where it's like, oh yeah, they're usually okay? And I had zero issue with it whatsoever. And I've since spoken to a lot of other people that also use isopods. It's a great natural way to make sure there's always food available. So in those cases, I would probably advise using a slightly larger container just because you're going to have all the little isopods in there. But even with I've done it with the little smaller 5-dram vials and it worked out perfectly fine. And again, it's, you don't even have to worry about the feeding because there's natural prey already in there with the spider. So they can go ahead and eat those isopods, grow up, and then pretty soon they'll get big enough that hopefully you can use larger prey. So feeding wise, always for me, it's all about the scavenge feeding. I think that's the easiest, safest thing to do. And it's, again, something that you, it's very easy to get some of those prey items and have them on hand, but just make sure you pull out those remains. This is one you don't want to get lazy with. And I know we've all done, I've done it where you drop something in, and sometimes not laziness, sometimes you just forget. You drop something in, you expect it to feed, and then you forget about it. And it's like 3 days later and you're like, whoa, and you see the mold in there. You got to make sure that you keep that environment clean for them. Okay, so now we have our enclosure. We have it set up. We have sphagnum in it, or we have a little dirt with a little coca fiber, a little spirit of sphagnum in it. We're doing our pre-killed prey. The spider's eating well. Now we need to make sure that this spider has the appropriate moisture level it needs to thrive. And again, some species, there are a handful of ones out there that really seem to be able to live off of almost bone dry substrate. Even those, I try to make sure there's a moist corner. So like even with my G. porteri that I'm raising up, or my G. rosea that I raised up, those I kept mostly bone dry, and I would kind of moisten down one corner every once in a while, or dribble some water on the webbing of the plant so they could go drink off that. But they don't like it when it gets too moist. The majority of slings out there, though, they are going to require some degree of moisture at all times. Now, the trick with these is you want to make sure they don't dry out, but I think where sometimes we go wrong, and I think I've been guilty of this before, we overdo it with the moisture. We don't want to create a dank, stuffy, inhospitable environment for these spiders. We want to make sure that they have the moisture they need, that the inside of it doesn't get too dry, but we don't want to overdo it. And the reason why I say I think I've done it before, because you have those times, unfortunately, where you're trying to add moisture to the enclosure. It's a teeny tiny enclosure, and you slip and you spray in a little too much water, or you squirt in a little too much water with your pipette, and suddenly the thing's a swamp. And because of the fact there isn't that cross ventilation, there isn't a lot of airflow in that, and as a result, it won't dry out as quickly as maybe a larger enclosure will. And I think we've all had that moment where you go to pour in water and you're like, whoa, overdid it. I did once. I remember I had to rehouse because I had my little water bottle with the holes in the top, and I hadn't screwed the top on tight, and I squeeze it to try to get more water, and it blasts off and filled the whole thing with water. I'm like, this is way too much. And that's very, very easy to do when you're dealing with very small enclosures. So that's back to my tip earlier. Make sure you have a pipette or a syringe. Syringes both work great. Syringes, I think, can be a little easier to really direct that moisture exactly where you want it, so you can kind of jam that tip in there. Or they can do the same thing with a pipette. It's just the tip of the pipette can be a little bit bigger. But those work great for making sure that you can control how much water you put in there. So you don't have a situation where you pump that thing so full of water that the substrate's completely moist. It's going to increase the amount of chances you have for mold when you put in the prey items. A lot of times you get it too wet, the spider won't even sit on the substrate. That helps you to avoid that. And I think this is one of those reasons why when people ask me why I feed my slings as often as I do, I usually do every 2 or 3 days. Nowadays, it's like every 3 days. Part of it is because you do want to make sure you check on your slings. You want to make sure you don't have one of those days where, you know what, your tarantula room hits 83 degrees, you hadn't added moisture in a while, that thing dries out, and you go in there, you pop the top, and there's your little prize spider in a complete death curl because, well, it got dry one day, too hot, didn't have moisture, and now it's dead. So that's, I think, the trick of why I encourage folks to feed every 3 days or so, because it's encouraging you to check on. It's not just feeding, it's you're checking on the spider. And again, we want to make sure, you don't want a situation where you overcare for it. I know folks that will tell me they check their spiders every single day. They go in there, they make sure they add moisture, whatever. That might be a little too much of an overkill. I mean, checking on them every day, shining a flashlight in there and going, oh, there he is. Isn't he cute? That's fine. But you don't want to do it to the point where every day you're opening up, adding moisture, putting food in. That's a little too much for the spider. Every 3 days or so, check on it, maybe do a feeding, maybe not. If you're feeding, again, larger prey, it might fill up more quickly. But go in there, just make sure that it hasn't dried up too much. Because, again, having spoken to people for many, many years, and through my own experiences, I found that that's going to be the biggest threat to these guys. Not that they're not going to eat. That's usually not an issue. I think it comes down to more that we can't tell that they're eating. Although there are obviously those species out there that do like the fast. It can happen. Again, I'm looking at you, G. porteri, G. rosea. Unfortunately, Homeoma chilensis is another one that can sometimes fast. So just a heads up, or people worry that they're fasting. And they're slow growers too. So it can be, you know, kind of stressful when you're growing up a teeny tiny sling and all you want it to do is put on size quick and it eats a couple times and then doesn't eat or molt for a month or two. That can be tough, but that's something we need to mentally prepare for. But that's usually not going to be the issue. The issue is going to be we either overcare for them, keep things too moist, add water too much, disturb them too much, or allow things to dry out, which ends up with a dead spider and a death curl because it didn't have the moisture it required. So now we have our spider set up, we have its enclosure, we have its substrate, we know how to feed it, we've got our moisture, our system down for keeping things moist. One last thing we want to talk about is temperatures. For the majority of these species, they do just as well as the older counterparts in the same types of temperatures. You don't have to freak out. I know back when I first got slings, I was like, oh gosh, I got to keep the slings extra warm. And again, I think what it comes down to is we're trying to grow them up more quickly. We recognize, again, I say it in most of my videos, warmer temperatures will usually lead to higher metabolisms and faster growth rates. So obviously, if you're trying to grow these guys up quickly, it behooves you to have them in warmer temperatures. But don't freak out if the temperatures drop a little bit. The first slings that I raised were all raised during the wintertime in the mid to high 60s. And they did fine. They grew more slowly than some other folks that were raising theirs all in the 70s, but they ate fine. A lot of the beginner species, Afanipelma, Gramostola, Brachypelma, the slings, these are the types of slings that if you ship and the heat pack fails and you lose all your spiders, if there's going to be something alive in that package, it's going to be one of those three genera of spiders because they do experience those low temps. So you definitely don't have to worry about them. Some of the tropical species or Asian species, you want to be a little more careful of it not getting too cold. I mean, we don't want things too chilly. And ideally, I always tell folks when you're keeping slings, put them on a high shelf. A, it'll be out of the way of little kids or anybody that might bump into them. B, though, the higher shelves, heat rises, the warmest part of your room is always going to be the highest part. So I always talk about the temperatures in here. I set the thermostat in the wintertime to 73. Lower shelves are usually around 70, 71. Higher shelves sometimes hit 75. Really high shelves, even higher, because when that heat kicks on, that heat rises. So use that to your advantage. Find a place that they're going to be up on a higher shelf so that it stays a little bit warmer than the actual overall temperature in the room that made the thermostat maybe only, I don't know how high they put them up, 4 feet or so. Above that, a couple feet, the temperature is going to be warmer. You want them up there. So that's something to consider as well. And then the final question I usually get, when should I rehouse? And I think that kind of depends on the spider. For me, it's usually like the one I planned on rehousing yesterday was about a half an inch or so, maybe a little bit larger. It had definitely outgrown that 5 dram. So I was going to put it into a larger dram vial. That's the other thing is at a half an inch or so, they're still pretty small. So again, be careful what you put them into. At that point, you know, I think it's okay to start breaking out some of those premium enclosures. They have some really small ones, but again, pay attention to the moisture level. Make sure they don't evaporate or dry out too quickly. I like to, a half inch, that's still a pretty small sling. Yes, you want to put it into something bigger. You don't want to go nuts with it. That's sometimes where I break out the 5-ounce deli cups. Those work really well. They're easy to ventilate around the sides. You can put in a little more substrate. They offer decent visibility. That might be something to use, a larger dram vial, but I wouldn't jump immediately and go, all right, I'm taking it from this little teeny tiny vial to a 16-ounce deli cup, because then you'll find yourself once again in a situation where it's hard to find the sling. So usually around once they hit the half inch mark, that's usually when I feel a little more comfortable with them. I don't consider them to be super small spiders anymore. I like to think a little more hardy, but again, they're still slings. And if you remember when we started talking, we talked about the fact that the majority of a lot of folks will start off with larger slings, half an inch to 3/4 of an inch, and those still freak us out. We can still have issues with them. So always keep them. Don't get cocky. Hey, I got this thing up from 1/3 of an inch to now it's a 1/2 inch, and I've got it. It's still fragile, so be careful. So that's usually the time I would consider rehousing. And once again, although we've made it through the woods, it's no longer this microscopic little booger that we can barely see. it still qualifies as a sling. It's still about the size of many, you know, honestly, a lot of species that are sold out there are usually around the half inch mark when they go out for sale. So it's still tiny. So be careful. But that's, those are my tips. That's what I can think of as far as what I do. And it's kind of fun for me because I have been eyeing some smaller slings. So I'm going to have to give some teeny tiny ones a shot again. It's kind of a reminder to me some things I've done that have worked, some tips and tricks. Hopefully these will help some folks that are picking up smaller ones in the future. Hopefully some folks that have smaller ones that have their own tips and tricks will chime in. Because again, it shouldn't be all about me. This is what I do. This is what works for me. This is what I've had success with. But I'm not trying to insinuate that that is the only way to do it. There aren't other things that people have done that work out really well for them. I mentioned this earlier, but didn't get into detail with it. But again, a sling nursery, a great way to just add that extra level of protection where you put all of your slings into a larger plastic ventilated container, and then you put an open water source in it. I use some, sometimes I'll use like a 16 ounce deli cup with water so that as that evaporates, it keeps the moisture level in there. That's great during the winter time because the winter time is when you're going to have problems. The winter time, when the heat kicks on, and the air dries out really bad, those little vials can dry out super quickly. So that's when you want to break out one of those to make sure, again, the vial's still going to evaporate. The water in the vial is still going to evaporate out, but it slows it down when the environment it's evaporating out into actually has some moisture in it as well. So that would definitely be a point. Even if you have, I've seen folks before, and I thought this was kind of cool, they had like a 16 ounce deli cup ventilated. They put sphagnum moss in the bottom of it and they put their vials on the sphagnum moss and they kept the sphagnum moss in there wet. So they didn't have a lot of slings, so they didn't need a big plastic enclosure. So they just did that. And that was a nice way to keep it up. So something to think about. So that will do it for this one. Hopefully folks will find this useful. Hopefully from now on, when folks ask me, what do? I got a teeny tiny sling. I don't know what to do with it. I can point them in the direction of this podcast and this will answer their questions. Obviously, if I hear stuff that's really good, we'll do an update on this probably next week or the week after where I explain some things other people have said because we want the most complete information out there we can get for folks that are trying to raise up the little microscopic boogers that give us fits. As always, you can find me on YouTube. Obviously did not do the video on the Davis species Panama, but what I ended up doing was my Heterothele villicella, my Tanzanian chestnut, which I love those spiders. This is my third one. First one was got, I'm pretty sure was impacted. And I think that was because of my poor husbandry because I'd read they needed to be kept bone dry. Didn't do enough research. I'm thinking things were a little too dry for it. That's my guess. I'm blaming myself on that one. Second one raised up to maturity. It was a tiny, teeny, tiny mature male, which one of the smallest mature males I've ever seen. It might have been an inch and a half, maybe max. And then now I got this third one that looks like a female that we just rehoused. And as I was doing research, one of the things I do is before I put up a video, I always do some research on where they come from, see if there's any new papers, because every once in a while I stumble on something. And I found this paper that was released, and I believe it was March of 2020, where they discovered that all of the original materials for 181 species of tarantulas were in a museum that was destroyed during World War II, and they don't have any of these materials anymore. The original type specimens are completely destroyed. So they've gone back and basically said that all 181 of these previously described species are now nomen dubium, which means basically name in doubt, meaning, all right, we can't really verify this is the exact species. And that kind of, like, I was shocked. So now it's Heterothele, technically it should be Heterothele species villicella, until that somebody goes and reexamines them and does the research or whatever, that's when it's going to remain. But I thought that was an interesting tidbit, so I was glad I looked it up. But wow, 181 species, that's a huge chunk of described species that they are now saying their names are in doubt. So I'm sure what will happen is somebody is going to leap on that and go, oh, this is a good chance to make a name for myself and reexamine them and come up with a new name. So I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the road that changes. But for the time being, we're still calling it H. villicella. Beautiful little, what is it, the Tanzanian chestnut. Beautiful little dwarf. True dwarf species where females supposedly only get to be about 2.5 inches or so. My girl is about an inch and a half maybe. And during the video, I'll point this out, which is something that hasn't happened in a long time. I set up an enclosure. It was one of those 12x7x9 barbarous growth enclosures for her. And once we got her out of her vial and I saw the size of her, I was worried that you might be able to scape out some of the small gaps on that. I usually put larger spiders in. I thought she was closer to 2 inches. So we ended up pausing the video. I had to go out, find another enclosure, clean it out, wash it down, make a couple changes to it, and then put all the stuff, the fixings from the old enclosure I had into this one, and restart the video, which took a little while, but I was glad I could show that, hey, sometimes when you're doing those rehousings, and you have a fossorial species or species you don't see that much, I've had situations where I go to put them in an enclosure and the spider's much bigger than I thought it was going to be. So I had to kind of get a bigger enclosure, or in this case, I needed something a little smaller. So that's in there if you want to check that out. That will do it for this one, guys. If you want to comment, I've had people say, hey, I wish I could comment, but there's no way to comment on your podcast. Spotify has a thing now that you can comment on. So I don't know how many people out there. It looks like my Spotify numbers. I've never paid attention to how many people really listen to this. I get through Buzzsprout is where I host it, and they give you kind of an idea, but I'm not really hung up on that. But lately, I've been watching my Spotify numbers. I'm getting emails from Spotify, and I've been getting emails from all these people who want to do like either collaborations, or which usually is people that have nothing to do with what I talk about on here. They just looked at my numbers and went, oh, this guy's got a good audience. Let's try to do this. Or they want to sell products on it. So I know apparently things are heating up over there, which is great because I guess Spotify is a great place to have your podcast take off on. But they do have a section there you can leave comments. I just unfortunately can't respond to them. And then on tomsbigspiderspodcast.com, you can leave comments there. A lot of folks do. I just know it doesn't automatically approve the comments. I have to go through and approve them. And sometimes I get behind the eight ball because, as we know, I'm scatterbrained and I'm doing a million things. But summer's coming, so that should be at least some of that should be alleviated soon. I'm done talking. I need a glass of water or something. My voice is going. Guys, have a fantastic week, and we'll catch you all next time.